Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 417th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Christopher Hall and Anna Anfi. You can check out Christopher Hall's website at penumbra-pictures.com. Very cool stuff. And you can check out Anna at Instagram.com/ANXANFFE. Anna Anfi. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today, we've got our live show, our casting director live show, recorded at the Lee Strasberg Theater a few evenings ago. It was so fun.
Live shows are so fun. I feel like every episode should be a live show if we had someone to organize.
I think we should do, you know, one a quarter.
One a quarter. But it's like, I really enjoy them personally. I don't know what you think. I mean, I'm incredibly stressed out before they start because I'm like, you know, like trying to move beers into a cooler or something. And someone's like, hey, Oren, remember me? I talked to you like 4 months ago. I'm like, no idea who they are. And I'm like sweating and none of the XLR mic cables are working. But then it's, it's so fun to talk in front of an audience and feel the room. And then afterwards, just hang out. Like people just hang out till like 11 p.m. every time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great vibe. And also, you know, it's that fun combination of, there were a lot of people who came out who have been listening for years, and that's special. And you can tell that they are kind of getting to know each other through the podcast. You know, there's like a handful of like OG listeners, and that's a real treat. And then also a bunch of brand new listeners who are, you know, kind of making their way in Los Angeles. It's really fun. And it reminds me also of like a time well before all of this when networking and like events were a bigger part of my life, you know, and a community kind of emerging around those. Like back in the day, I used to go to like tube filter meetups and like, you know, or like,
I love filtering tubes,
but just like, you know, to be able to have a community coalesce around some sort of event, I think is really special. And it's really awesome. Yeah, it's really, really great. So,
and by the way, for the people that weren't there, you're going to hear in our unpaid endorsement section, my unpaid endorsement is completely edited out of the show. It was so controversial that I was asked to remove it out of the episode, but everyone that was there live heard it. And so you, dear listener, who were not there live, will never hear it. And I'm sorry for you because one of the listeners said it was one of the funniest things they've ever heard me say, which is not really.
Wow, that's not really saying much. But no, it was a really fun night. And so if you want to stay in the loop on things, the best way to do that, the people who find out first are always our Patreon listeners. They're getting more exclusive content. That's really cool. Patreon patrons got in to the show for free, even at the $1 level. It was rad, man.
Yeah. Cool. And I feel like we should just, since this is the intro to the episode, just say that this is a panel of three casting directors that cast TV, that cast film, that cast commercials. We tried to make it really a balanced episode that would appeal to both actors and directors and filmmakers. In terms of how we interact with casting, like how do you get names into your movies as a filmmaker? How do you make sure to put your best foot forward as an actor? So I'm really hoping actors listen to this episode too. And maybe, you know, follow us on Instagram at Just Shoot It Pod.
I have a question for the listeners and for you. Right before the pandemic, we'd found a really great home at Rita House, which was like a venue kind of near the Grove that we had a really great rapport with the people who were working there, and all that was wonderful. But prior to that, and afterwards, we've kind of been jumping from location to location. We did the Louis Strasberg Theater, and we did an acting themed episode there. You know, we've done commercial production companies when we're talking about commercials. We kind of, you know, we try to theme the topic to the place that's hosting. But that means that we're reinventing the wheel every single time, right? So I guess what I'm asking to the listeners and you is it better to, you know, jump around, do some stuff on the west side, the east side, different studios, or to just find a home and make that the place where we do the shows?
I'm down for a home, but I also like it when a new company is promoting us. So
yeah.
I think there's advantages to both. But yeah, let us know what you think. Or if you want to host the live show at your office or park or school or whatever, let us know. We're down, ideally in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Hopefully you can help out with some chairs and some pizza. That's kind of the main thing.
Yeah. If you want to sponsor a show, let us know. We had Black Magic come in last minute again for this one. It was very cool.
Hooking it up once again.
Yeah. Anyhow, I know that at least one of our panelists, spoiler alert, Mary Ruth, is really excited to hear this episode.
Before we get into the episode, I'm going to lead with an unpaid endorsement. Friend of the show, Beecha Heen, who also produced the movie See You Next Christmas with myself, she is offering a workshop on Saturday, April 13th, from 1 to 5 online via WebEx for people who are interested in breaking into the world of being an office PA. She's got like all this tremendous experience. She was coordinating for Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Grand Cru, and she's just trained so many office PAs and kind of developed this course over the last year while everyone was on strike, and has given a speech to her alma mater and a bunch of other places. And now this is the first time that it's open to people remotely. And I was like, oh, this would actually be a really awesome resource for people who are kind of looking to break into that world if they want to do the production, specifically like the studio route. So if you're curious about like how to run like a studio office, what that takes to make a TV show or a movie on that level, there's no better person to learn from than Beecha Heen. TRI-C Office PA Workshop via WebEx with Beecha Heen. We'll leave a link in the show notes for people who are interested. Or you can hit us up on Instagram. We have it there, too.
Okay. Now, let's chat with our panel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, can you all hear us?
Hey, everyone.
Okay, if you guys are sitting down, raise your hand.
Great. If you're standing up, sit down.
Thanks for coming, everyone. This is our first time here at the Lee Strasberg Institute Theater
and Theater Institute. And Institute, I guess. Yeah.
Is your mic
round
on?
Of applause, everybody. Can you hear me?
And in the back, is the volume okay? Are we loud enough to? Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming. This is a Just Shoot It podcast.
That's right. We've been doing it for over 400 episodes.
Yeah. Do you know what
episode? We're still figuring out the name.
Yeah. Listen to the casting directors. They know what they're talking about. So next time, Danielle, there's a microphone if you want to say things.
Give them a big round of applause.
Thank you all for coming. We have a pretty full house, which is pretty cool because, you know, when we tell people about this, we only post it on Instagram and we have no idea, like, if our listeners actually follow us on Instagram. Like, how many podcasts do you follow on Instagram? So, just one.
Just one is all you need, guys.
But we thought, you know, we want to do a different topic every time we do an episode. And we've never, I don't think we've had casting directors on in the past, but we've never done a panel of casting
directors. Never three of them like this.
Never three of them. And it's just something that we felt like, you know, a lot of actors hear from casting directors, but not a lot of directors do. And like many things for directors, like, you know, we're usually not on set together. It's really hard to learn from other directors. So we don't see how other directors cast, like what they do in castings, how they talk to actors, how they prepare for auditions. And so we were really curious. So we invited these three amazing casting directors, all doing very cool things. We have Danielle Affiero right here. She's cast many, many, many things, but some of my favorite things are The 100, Leo, the Netflix movie with Adam Sandler. We just watched it. It's really good. Yeah. Casting was pretty
that
decent.
That was my very first animated project.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yay. Congrats. Thanks. She did Sound of My Voice, Cheap Thrills, and my favorite, The Zombies Trilogy. Did you cast all three of them?
Cast all three of them. Found Milo, and my business partner found Milo in community theater.
Oh, really?
Yep. And we just cast the fourth one.
Oh, cool.
So if you have kids, you're going to be hearing about that.
Yeah. Next up, we have Jane Flowers. She's worked on a ton of different things. She worked in casting on Daisy Jones and the Six. I think that SWAT team is pretty cool. Right, sorry, I mean SEAL team. Sorry. SEAL team, I love any sort of procedural action shows on TV. And you also cast some pretty awesome actors in some student films, but most importantly, you cast a movie produced by Matt Enlow.
See you next Christmas. It's available on Peacock.
See you next Christmas.
Yeah, it's on Peacock. So, you know, check it out there, guys.
Yeah, check it out. Also, the director of that film is here.
Shout out, Christine.
Can
Weatherup.
You raise your hand?
Yay, Christine!
Yeah. And also, my lovely wife. I talk about her in class all the time. So, say hi afterwards.
And finally, casting director I work with all the time, Mary Ruth Manley. Sorry, I met her when...
Keeps forgetting I'm married now.
Yeah, sorry. Mary Ruth Manley, she casts, I think, like my last... Like, every time I shoot in L.A. a commercial, I try to get Mary Ruth on it. She's awesome. Yeah, she's cast for Kia, for Little Caesars, PayPal, Zillow. Everything she's trying to get a discount on, she casts.
That's right.
So thanks for joining us.
Awesome, guys. And one more round of applause for the Lee Strasberg Theater. Thanks, guys. Awesome. Yeah. Enough applause. Before we get any further, I'm curious, because this is unique. We've got a lot of students in the crowd, as well as a lot of filmmakers. Show of hands if you are an acting student here at the Institute. Awesome. Okay. Looks about half of you. And then filmmakers? Great. Awesome. Well, then we prepared our questions well. 50-50. Awesome.
Awesome. And we chose our jobs because we don't like to be in front of cameras or in front of lights. So if we look gross and sweaty and uncomfortable, now you know why. Okay, so let's start asking some questions. Let's talk about casting. Can I ask each of you like how many years you've been in casting and like why you got into it?
Sure. I've been casting since the early 2000s. I got into it because I just grew up with movies and TV as my babysitter and always thought I wanted to be an actor until I saw myself on camera and then I thought, heck no. And then I had a lot of jobs out of college that I hated and I was tired of hating my job. And a friend of mine was like, well, do something about it. What's your dream job? I'm like, I don't know, I'll be a casting director. Because that just sounded so cool.
Wait, but how did you know that that even like existed as a job?
Because I would, Marion Doherty's name would be on the credits of all of these movies I loved so much from the 80s. And I just thought like, wow, she gets to like hang out with actors and act with them, but doesn't have to be on camera. It sounded pretty ideal. So, and you get to be a part of the storytelling process of filmmaking. So yeah. I just interned in a casting office in New York and thought I needed some TV credits. So I moved to LA. I'm like, I'll be here for a year or two. And then that was 2005.
Nice. Yeah. And now that there's Oscars for casting, maybe we'll all know who Marion Doherty is and these other famous casting people. What about you, Jane?
I've been casting since 2011. For most of my life, I was an actor. I think a lot of casting directors come from the acting world, so we understand what it's like to be on the other side of the audition.
I dare say you're even on their side.
Right? For sure.
Hopefully.
So I got my BFA in musical theater at University of Buffalo. Then I moved to New York City and I pounded the pavement and I did a lot of off Broadway. Then I went back to school. I got my MFA in acting at UCLA. And I had directed a couple of plays. And both times I sort of clocked in my mind that my favorite part of the process was the casting room. So after I graduated from UCLA, I got my first casting internship and I loved it.
Can I ask specifically what you liked about it? Like, what was that spark?
You know, I think it's giving actors opportunities. It's, you know,
being
opening,
a kingmaker.
Well, just opening those doors, you know, seeing those people that have worked really hard for a really long time and giving them a job. It feels good.
Great. Mary Ruth?
Sure. So I primarily do commercials, and I was 21 and needed a job and didn't want to work at a restaurant, had been doing that, knew someone in casting, started working for a few different casting directors around town, and quickly, sort of same story, fell in love with it. I loved the interaction with people, I loved the energy around auditioning, I loved being in the room for the selects, seeing why people were picked, why people weren't. I just loved it from start to finish. So I started assisting and then I started my first company at 23. But at 20, so I guess 18 years ago is when I first got into it. And yeah, I love it. I am, you know, I think we all are, but a casting director's, I'm an actor's casting director. I really appreciate the hard work and I see it. And I think what's, you know, cool about commercials is, or what one of the things I love about it is like, you know, the benefits, especially within the union that it gives you to be able to provide for your family, to do, you know, whatever else. I know commercials aren't usually everyone's idea of where their career ends, but it's at least a starting point or something they can lean on while they're trying to do whatever else. But I like being there for that. So, yeah.
Awesome. I'm going to go immediately off script. And
I should have warned you guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I just like get more. I'm like, our questions are so boring. I have a more interesting question. You guys all said you got into this because you love actors. Something that happens to me a lot when I'm casting is like, I really like an actor and I'm fighting for them and, you know, trying to convince people. And then they just end up not getting it for like a number of different reasons. And I always feel like I wish that actor would know that they were like close to getting the part.
You can't be like, you were my favorite even though you didn't get it.
I mean, but I guess that's what I'm asking. Like how much feedback are you giving to actors that are that almost got the part? Like is that part of your process at all? Or is it kind of just like, you'll call them in again? You know, like, can you talk a little bit about that? Maybe Danielle?
Yeah, I think for what I do, if you're almost getting the part, the actor knows, because there's like a process to it, and there's the testing, and
testing
you're at the studio. There's a few steps with TV, at least. For indie films, I think if they make it to a callback, and if the director works with them, or if we ask for a Zoom to give them more notes or retape or something, they kind of know that they were in the mix. And then sometimes I'll tell their rep, like, I was really rooting for them, and the reps know. The reps get it when we're like, I'm sorry, one more time, they need to come back in. But we love them, and we're trying, and we're doing whatever we can. I think they get it.
But it's all subtext. Like, you can say something.
I mean, yes. Every once in a while, I'm like, man, should have been you. But it's like, not really.
Do you, Jane, give actors like feedback if they didn't get a role? I know as directors, a lot of times when we're competing for jobs, we're like begging to know, like, why did you not choose me? You know, with actors.
I never ask. That's the difference between Oren and I.
Yeah.
Oren's like, who got it?
I literally was told yesterday that I wasn't enthusiastic enough about something. And I'm just like, I can't let go of it. If you haven't noticed. But also, I appreciate knowing that, because now I'm going to be like, checking my enthusiasm.
But you also shouldn't fake enthusiasm, right? Like, you should generally be enthusiastic about a project.
I don't know. I mean, I think there are people.
Everybody fakes it once in a while.
We've all seen actors. I know Mary Ruth and I have seen many actors that come in that are like a little too cool for school, and that like works for them.
Sometimes,
you know?
They love it, right? Yeah.
Like, there's like that fine line between enthusiasm and like thirst and like, right, like wanting it so bad that it's like, why does this actor want this so bad? Or why does this director want this job so bad? Do they not, have they never worked before? Sorry, Jane.
So just to piggyback off of what Daniel already said, you know, if they get a call back, that probably means that someone at least is rooting for them. If there's no callbacks, oftentimes we will pin people. You know, whoever is on sort of a short list. And, you know, if you hear that you've been pinned by your agent or your manager, again, just take that as a clue that you have impressed somebody. And, I mean, it depends on the project, too, but, like, the last indie that I just worked on, Big Mike's Cabin, there was a couple of roles that we did callbacks for, and the director really loved all of them, and it was really hard to make the decision. And that's a blessing and a curse, you know, because any one of them could have done it. It just would have been a different way to go. So she was really adamant about sending a very specific message to each of them, all the ones that didn't actually book it. But
like the director sent a message?
Yeah. I mean, I shared it with them, but it was from the director in her own words. Yeah, it was really
nice. That's nice and rare. I think we're kind of alluding to something, though, that's really interesting. Like, in each of your circumstances, the director is a creative stakeholder, but there are a lot of other people helping, chiming in, different voices making the call, right? In your experience, are there things that you do to kind of navigate things, to sway people in the creative decision that you think is best? Do you stand back? Do you wade in those waters, or is that not your headache?
There's something I've learned is, like, I can't not give my opinion. So I will always give my opinion. And I've learned that, like, if you push your opinion too much, then people will be like, well, now I really don't want to go with the person you're saying. So I will strongly give my opinion with reasons why, and then back off. And then they can make the decision they want to make, and then that person gets fired at the table read, and I was right all along.
With Mary Ruth, sorry, I feel like Mary Ruth, you don't really even need to be here, because I can just tell all of the stories of you But
I think you need to be here.
But, thank you. Thank you.
But wait, I got to say something, though, for the filmmakers. A lot of filmmakers think they could cast their own movie. We always need to be there. We need to be part of the process because your project will benefit from having a casting director.
Wait, we really want to dig into that in a second, but I was going to ask Mary Ruth about your opinion of the casting. Like, to me, that's like why it's important to work with a good casting director. I mean, there's many reasons, but for me personally, I've worked with like a lot of different casting directors. They're all great in different ways. But like what I love about when I work with Mary Ruth is I've narrowed it down to 5 actors that I think all have like something special about him. I will say, like, who do you think, Mary Ruth? Like, because you've seen, like, we see this actor for one role, but you've seen them for like 20 different roles. So you know their range, you know what they're good at, what they're bad at. Like, I don't know if I'm giving away too many secrets here, but like, I've had people on my short list that I've been thinking of casting, and you've told me before, like, oh, they were, you know, kind of tough on set, or like I can get some really deep feedback from casting directors. Yeah. And like, you know, there are casting directors that kind of
only happened one time, and he was very tough on set.
Yeah. It wasn't in a, you were still, you would have cast him.
Yeah. I still think he's an amazing actor. He was just like prepared to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would have, it was a really hard shoot. So we didn't want to go with someone that might, you know, demand a raise right after we say rolling sound is rolling, you know? But I think that like a lot, there are a lot of casting directors that just call in a million people and they're not even like watching all the auditions and stuff, you know?
I think too, you know, how you start out sort of has parlayed into how I am today. And it's like, I loved watching auditions. I loved watching what people did. I found it fascinating to see the choices that they made. You know, not to like scare anyone, but if it's a good run and it's a SAG job, we'll get 5,000 submissions. And we, depending on the budget, get to see anywhere from 30 to maybe 60 max for the role. And that is the 60 that I feel like I'm comfortable talking to you about. Not 100%. I'm not going to say I know every one of them, you know, through and through. But for the most part, I do. And, you know, and then it becomes the thing where then you whittle down. And now, especially in commercials, it's like, what does the client want? What does the creative want? And what do you want? And I can tell you what somebody brings to set. I don't know if that's what's going to sell this product. But yeah, I do think it's important for us to speak up about, you know, you're going to spend, especially if it's a really important role and there's a lot of dialogue and you're going to do a 2 or 3 day shoot with this person, it helps to have a little bit of backstory.
Awesome. Do you, I'm just curious, one thing from each of you, maybe starting with Danielle, of like what a filmmaker, and I know you probably work with a lot of showrunners and producers and not just directors, right? But what a filmmaker can do to prepare an actor to give their best audition. Like, you know.
How can we set them up for success?
Yeah. I think information, since you're living with a project longer than anyone, it's how you see even backstory to a character if you've thought that far into it. But I would say the most information about the world that you can give, about the tone you're going for, is gonna be helpful.
Yeah, I think there is
guy, like, 30 to 50, average build.
Sure. Open to all. Open to all.
Which we get that a lot. And it's like, well, I gotta be a little bit more.
Yeah, I do think sometimes actors feel like, especially for kind of longer narrative stuff, they're like, well, we just want to see what the actor brings. Like, let's just let them bring stuff. But it's like, they're not loaded with anything to go off of. And like, we've worked with on a lot of sets where someone's like, just have them improvise some funny things. And like, you can work with like the best actor. Like, I did a thing with Tim Meadows and the people were like, just have him improvise some funny things at the end. And he was like, about what? Like, you know, like you got it. The more, Kindle you give him, the better the fire. Yeah, how you start a fire?
I don't know. That's exactly right. Just to follow up on the tone of it all in particular, because I feel like sometimes directors, I'll maybe put myself in this category, we can get a little self-indulgent, overly romantic, precious even about those big roles that you love the most, right? And sometimes
I've seen circumstances, especially in a Zoom situation, where like I'll write something up that I think is just really evocative and clear, and those first few tapes roll in, and I have to get on the phone and be like, where are we going sideways on this? How do we fix this? Because I've misled them somehow. And I feel like great casting directors can kind of sniff that out and be like, hey, you know, maybe this actors don't know what you're talking about when you say, you know, fall in love with the character or something dumb like that. Do you recontextualize things at all? Do you kind of tweak what a director is saying, and what are the signals that you're trying to give an actor to kind of like hone in on things?
I would say yes, sometimes. Sometimes it is very clear. And if the actor doesn't get it, then they're not the right actor for your project. What I love to tell actors is like, you have to bring yourself to it. Don't try to guess what we are waiting to see. Because if then we would get hundreds of the same tape. So we want to see your take on it and what makes you special and what makes you different about your version of this role. Because everyone's, you know, their own special sauce. So you could send in the best tape and you could be the best actor. It might not be the right for that role. But now we know, like, oh, this person went really interesting with this. I wouldn't have thought of the character this way. And I've worked on movies where somebody will audition with this, like, great characteristic. And that characteristic was taken for the final project, even though that actor didn't get the job. So, like, it can work against you. But also, I know that actor is going to bring some sort of commitment to the role and thought. And I wouldn't say, like, make sure you do something unique. It's just make sure you understand where you're coming from. And you comprehend the scene and the character and make some choices.
Yeah, it's great. So, Jane, what would you tell filmmakers? Like, any advice, like one thing that they should do to kind of optimize the audition process, like get the best performance out of an actor?
I mean, I'd say concise and kind communication. So if you're watching self-tapes and there's a few that you want to call back, but each of them have something about it that you would change, let us know. Tell the casting professionals. You know, maybe write something up and we can send them notes before the callback so they can prep ahead of time and give them that time to take. Kindness goes a long way. And I've also had, you know, directors, as you were saying, the flowery thing, just over-explain something to the point where it then circles back around and becomes confusing. So just really getting to the point of what is it that you would do differently, that you would adjust.
Cool. And what about you, Mary Ruth? Any advice to filmmakers on how to get good performances? To me, the interesting thing about commercials is like a lot of times there's no dialogue. You know, you're auditioning someone to like walk, you know, like get out of their car, put like a gas.
The bite and smile is truly the hardest acting job you can book. I could never do it. It's so hard to be able to pull it off.
Can you tell us what that is in case people don't know?
The bite and smile is like for pizza companies, or Olive Garden is one of the big ones, where we spend countless hours trying to perfect the ability to take a bite and smile, potentially even talk, without it looking like there's food in your mouth. And
I thought you were saying Biden smile.
Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah. I was like, I've never heard of this. I'm learning something new.
It's a new Mona Lisa smile.
Sorry, no, bite.
Biden, yeah, Biden's yes. Smile's pretty good, I guess.
Anyway, it's topical very hard podcast. To do. I'm just
wait,
gonna
do they
like
really eat food in the audition? Like, are they
yeah.
actually eating?
Oh, yeah. Yes,
oh yeah,
yes,
tell
yes.
us a little bit about that, like, you know, vegans auditioning for KFC commercials.
They
do and stuff.
Well, they'll have, and understandably so. It's like, you know, they will eat this, they won't eat that, all that kind of stuff. So obviously
ever,
if they don't eat chicken, then they probably can't do Chick-fil-A. Or also don't want to.
Yeah. Have you ever cast an actor who explicitly doesn't like the food? That's something that comes up in class all the time. They're like, I don't like Doritos or whatever. And I'm like,
oh. No, I think actors want to work more than just having like a bad taste for Doritos. But no, it's
who
normally...
Who doesn't like Doritos? It's literally the best
show of hands.
Mass market chip.
I see some of you out there.
Chris Wilde doesn't like Doritos. Come on, man.
No, I think I'll just double down on what they said. It's like clarity. It's just to be as clear and not long-winded about it as you can be, especially with first calls. It's like, all right, let's just see what the actors bring to the table with this. We see what's working. We see what's not. Normally what I like to do is like, here's the box that I was given. Here's my adding to it. And then I want you to also keep it authentic and make it your own, which is there's a lot of those buzzwords. But it, like she said, it's like, if I'm watching 50 tapes and everyone does the exact same thing, no one stands out. And the standing out isn't standing on your head, but it is making these tiny nuanced choices that are smart and engaging and make me want to watch you. And with self-tapes, I mean, the beauty of that is that you get to do that as many times as you want. I know it's a lot harder sometimes on first calls, especially perhaps on a job where we weren't allowed to give you the script beforehand. But if that's the case, my advice is always like, do what you can to walk out of that room and feel good about your audition. Not necessarily like, I did the script exactly like it said, I hit my mark. I mean, some casting directors, maybe that's super important. But for me, it's like, did I enjoy watching the audition? And so I think just try, I know it's hard too because nerves kick in, but yeah, I think just being clear from the get-go and then knowing at callbacks, you know, what I feel like works the best, and this is like for the directors, is unless there's a major change in the script, is to let them come in and just do a take. So they get a feel for the room. If the clients are all on Zoom, what does that feel like? If the clients are all in person, what does that feel like? If someone, when they walked in the room, is on their computer and they have to finish a location email, whatever it is, the actor doesn't know what's going on, you know, when they walk in the room. And so I think just letting them get one out, and it's almost the rehearsal. And sometimes it's gold, but and we record it. But I think, you know, really starting at take two.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Can we talk a little bit about mistakes that you guys see oftentimes in an audition environment from either directors or from actors?
Yeah, let's see. I mean, this is the salacious stuff, so let's spend some time with it. Maybe let's start with actors, because, you know, there's some actors here. What are, Mary Ruth, what's like one mistake? It doesn't have to be the number one mistake. Just a mistake that you commonly see from actors, especially like kind of newer actors.
Hold on, let me think. Pass. I gotta think.
Jane,
for a second.
You got it? Any?
Well, I don't know how common it is, but you hear stories, and if it's in person, do not bring a weapon. It does not matter if it is a toy. Just don't do it.
That actually happened to me in an audition room once when
exactly, like
somebody
I said,
had a switchblade. And it was a director session, so thankfully the director actually handled it, and he made the guy leave, and the guy was also kind of drunk. It was very weird. The indie filmmaking, right?
That sounds like two mistakes right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be drunk as well.
And yeah, so sobriety is key. I would say when you don't do your homework, you know, get a lot of times, like Mary Ruth said, you don't get the script because we're not allowed to give it. But do what you can to like get all the other sides for all the other characters that are available. Look up anything these filmmakers have done before. Look up what the casting office has done before. Just do your homework, and I don't know, knowledge is power, right? So you want to be as informed as possible.
Specificity, specificity, yeah. Specificity. You know, that's the actor's work. It's, you know, asking yourself all of the important actor craft questions. Who am I? Where am I? Where am I coming from? What's my pre-beat? What are my obstacles? Like, how do I overcome my obstacles? What do I want? How do I get what I want? You know, how do I shift between the transitions? All of those things. Like, really dig in and get specific with what you want to do.
If it's like a one-page audition and you have two lines, do you still think, like, if you're not given that stuff in the script, do you think you should just make it up for yourself? The answers to those things, who I am, where I'm coming from, and why I care about this?
Yeah, and I mean, if it is just two lines, then don't overthink it as well.
Most of the time also, though, like a two-line person, the person you are is a waiter or a hungry person who wants to eat a hamburger, right? Like, it doesn't have to be necessarily like, but well, I'm a detective who's down on his luck, right?
Even for those like co-star roles, you can find something to ground you, you know, whether that is, you know, if that is a waiter or a waitress, like, how long have I been on this shift? You know, how long have I been on my feet? Am I tired? Or did I just get there and I'm, you know, raring to go? Like, just making little choices that sort of bring the scene to life for you, whatever helps you.
I think that's the secret to what you were getting at, Mary Ruth, about the nuances of even those super, super tiny roles, like the bite and like, that's how you get there. That's how you build out something that's captivating to watch, right?
Yeah, and it's crazy. You need to, like, if you're an actor that has had like 15 years of experience, you do get better at the bite and smile because you're just not in your head about it, you know? And it's like those tiny things, when you have to do one small thing, sometimes they're the hardest because it's like you have to, you know, not act.
We're always looking for authenticity, right? So if it's a two-line role, that means that hostess or waitress is coloring the world that we're creating. And it's sometimes just as important to make sure we get that right. And you'd be surprised how many people don't get it right because they're going too big or chewing the scenery on their making their one-line role the most important thing in the whole wide world, whereas the one-line role is usually supposed to be supporting the other characters and kind of an aside. If you throw it away, I know that's actor's favorite direction. If you throw it away, it might feel more real because that's what the waiter or waitress or host or hostess would do.
Wait, are you being sarcastic about it being their favorite direction? Actors don't like it?
I feel like actors don't like that.
It is notoriously like...
Oh, really? Throw it away? I say it all the time.
Pace it up faster.
Do you say that sometimes?
Yeah, of course. In class, I try to give them bad directions all the time, and that's one of my favorites. That I say earnestly all the time, too.
And just like a couple technical things, like if you're doing a self-tape, don't record it outdoors. If that's
casting directors hate nature, it's known thing.
Can't really hear them on tape, even if you have like your own microphone. The tape quality is just poor. Honestly, like if that's the only place you can do it, maybe this one should just be something that you let go and don't audition for at all.
Is that a point against someone if they made it from the 5,000 submissions to the 60?
If you're doing a self-tape, you should watch it back and make sure you're proud of it, right? You got to hear yourself. You got to see yourself. We got to be able to see the color of your eyes. Then we can read you. We can see what you're feeling. So you've got to watch that tape and be like, yeah, I nailed it. You know, and if it's outdoors and you still nailed it and we could hear you, then I'm fine with that. But you should... This is how you're presenting yourself, so you should put yourself in the best light possible.
Yeah, I think to come back and answer the question. I mean, it's hard when we sit there and we look through all those submissions and we put them out and then someone submits and it's like you could just kind of tell they didn't care. Or they didn't pay attention to the direction and they didn't listen and they didn't read and all of that. And it's like... I mean, similar to sort of what she said is you may as well pass. It's like disheartening to watch it. That's all. So if you're going to do it, you know, I think like anything in life, it's like if you're going to do it to the best of your ability. And if that means it has to be outside, that's fine. But if you crushed the audition and we could hear you and see you, great. But I think it's just like being prepared and showing up like you care because there are a lot of people trying to do this. And yeah.
Yeah. Competition is fierce out there. And you want to be invited back to the dinner party, right? You want to be that guest that like everyone's like, that person's awesome. I want them around all the time.
Yeah, let me ask you kind of related to filming an audition outside. I cast this thing in Ohio a couple years ago where a father and his daughter are like sitting at a fishing dock. And like, apparently everyone in Ohio seems to have access to a fishing dock because I'd say 95% of the auditions I saw The people went to a fishing dock and they filmed it at the fishing dock. And there wasn't any dialogue. You know, it was just like a father and his daughter, you know, fishing together and getting up and whatever, hanging out. What's your take on that? On the, like, you know, I have a good friend who's very good friends with, like, this famous actor. And he told me that when he was starting, he would, when he was auditioning
go for to his fishing dock.
SWAT team, yeah, he would, like, hide behind a crate and he'd have the camera following him and he would shoot scenes, you know, in his house. He'd have the light a little stylized, like, you know, my wife, Kara, who's sitting over here, who's a great actor. And we shoot a lot of auditions together. She's very against, like, anything beyond just, like, cameras on a tripod, and we just shoot it. So it sounds like, Danielle, you agree, like, don't do any filmmaking in an audition, but
I want to hear them say it.
Well, you know, sometimes we have gotten those where they're shooting the scene, and it just feels excessive. It's like you were saying, a little thirsty. You know, like, sometimes I think of auditioning as dating, where you're like, you don't want to seem too desperate. You want to make a good impression. You want to be cool. Confidence is contagious here, right? Let the acting speak for itself. You're not the filmmaker. The filmmakers are the filmmakers. You're there for a job, so let the acting speak for itself.
Yeah. Well, Mary Ruth, we cast, like, people in a bathroom, like, looking at a mirror, and I'd say, like, at least half of those tapes came back with people in their bathroom.
And I didn't tell them to do that. Yeah. Which I appreciated, but I just wouldn't do that because, again, it's like, if I'm asking you to now be sort of your own director, your own lighting, your own everything, you know, asking for a few props is usually about as far as I'll go. But if somebody wants to go big, you know, sometimes, especially with commercials, I think it's like, to see it for the creative is like, oh shit, yeah, okay, we could do that. But I do not think it's necessary. And I think most casting directors would agree that, like, you know, it's really just about the acting. So, yeah.
Jane, agreed?
I concur.
Jane disagrees. What does concur mean? So now, you know, we have some filmmakers in the room. So what is a mistake, Danielle, that you've seen filmmakers do?
Not hiring a casting director.
Oh, right. Yeah. Tell
number
us about...
Number one mistake.
You're talking about, like, for a feature? Like, what if I have a low-budget
If you have a low-budget... I mean, I've cast...
You cast Sound of My Voice.
I've cast Sound of My Voice. Was a $125,000 budget. You know, it was... I've cast lots of tiny budget things. And then that's when you reach out to a casting associate that wants to get a casting director credit. Or you find somebody that's done this.
And sorry, how do you do that? Like IMDb Pro?
You can IMDb Pro. There's a casting society has a website. You can reach out to people through the casting society website. You can ask your fellow filmmakers, have you ever worked with a casting director? And then you reach out. I still get calls for low budget movies. And if I can't do it, I'll refer someone.
You can post on IMDb Pro as well. There's a spot where
you can post for job
post
listings?
Jobs. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
People are looking to get credits and people are looking to build their resume. And I find that those are the people that you want because they're going to be eager. They're going to want to help you. They're going to want to shine. So it's kind of a collaborative thing.
Okay. So your mistake the filmmakers make is not hiring a casting director. Jane, what do you get?
I guess looking at an audition like it's the finished product. Like, really, how I think it should be looked at is, does this person have potential? Can I imagine that actor telling this story in the way that I want to tell the story? But not, are they 100% exactly doing it the way that I envision it on set? You know, because they're not on set. It's an audition. So...
No, that's great. Mary Ruth?
I feel like I just keep copying Jane. But that is true. It's like, you know, if you came in very specific on what you want and you know, it wasn't working and I've decided to make a different choice, or I think it is, especially on first calls, is like really just figuring out, like imagining the spot and can you see this person selling this product? And, you know, it's our jobs to help the actor bring it out. And so I think, yeah, I think having an open mind on the first calls and knowing that, you know, we fine tune it at callbacks and we get the take that the client wants and we get the take that you want and the take that the actor felt good about, is, yeah, just letting there be a little bit more gray.
Is there a way that a filmmaker can use you as a resource to help figure that out? Does that make sense? Like, because I feel like for years I cast and I didn't know that I could call the casting director and say, I don't know why this isn't working, but can you help me figure it out, you know? Because obviously you guys have cast more things than we have.
Yeah, usually the answer is because you want a famous person.
Well, that's a perfect segue.
Okay, that's another, because I was going to say another thing that filmmakers think is that if you have a famous person or someone with a large social media following, that equals a good movie.
Well, it does.
Sometimes it means a greenlit movie in our defense.
I mean, I think this is kind of like a, I don't know, Matt, this could be like a good final topic of just like attaching names. I think probably might not be as interesting to the actors in the room, but yeah. I think every
Show
filmmaker.
Hands, how many of you are famous?
You're attached. Like, so let's say I'm making a movie and it's, if I don't get a name, it's going to be a $250,000 movie. And if I get a name, it's going to be a $5 million movie. Like, what's my next step in terms of casting and like, yeah.
Danielle, she's grimacing.
I mean, just make the best movie you can. That doesn't mean it's a famous person. Maybe it is a famous person. Maybe they are the best person for the role. But, you know, Moonlight won an Oscar. It didn't have anybody famous in it. So you got to just make the best movie you can. And then it will... I want to say it'll see the light of day and it'll hit their audience. There is no guarantees, but there's no guarantees even for a famous person in your movie. Even if you have a celebrity in your movie, it doesn't mean it's going to do well.
Right. But what if it's Christopher Walken?
Great. Great.
Do you personally know Christopher
Walken? Right.
Because that's basically how you're getting them.
But James would be really good in this role. I know he would connect with the material.
No, but I guess, but in all seriousness.
But do you want to wait 2 months for Christopher Walken's agent to get back to us about an offer that he's never going to do?
Well, in all seriousness, how do you either catch an up-and-coming actor or an influencer turned actor? Like, what are some tips you have on trying to cast someone that will make your financier excited? Are there any tips? I can tell you my point of view on it because we've talked to many filmmakers trying to do this and have tried to do it ourselves many times. But it seems like unless you're, you know, offering them $10 million or something, like you need to have, the filmmaker needs to have some personal relationship with the actor, you know, and whether it's like their agent is friends with their manager and they read the script and they thought it was interesting and you get a meeting, what it is, but it seems to rarely ever be like, oh, this casting director is going to call this agent.
A cold introduction, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I know you get mandates from your financiers that you need, but sometimes you get mandates and then the people you think that you can get for this movie that are famous aren't the kind of famous that they need for the foreign sales or for whatever aspect it is that they need a certain name. And sometimes we're just like, can you just tell us who it is, like who the names are? Because it's not who you always expect. And we're not privy to that information, what's going to get you your foreign sales. So for us, we just want up-and-coming actors would be great. If there's something coming out that you think is going to be a hit, again, this is all guesswork. It's all using your experience to kind of understand this is coming out, this is going to be huge, trust us, kind of a thing.
Like what you did with Milo and like Zombies.
So like Milo and Zombies, Milo, my business partner Amber, saw him as the lead role in Rent in a play. And Milo isn't like your typical like star quarterback kind of looking kid when he was 14 when we cast him. But she saw him in the play and he nailed it. And he was charming. And all the girls in the audience came up to him afterwards. And she was like, I saw his magnetism.
Can I ask what brought her to the play? Was she like scouting?
Or she was invited, yeah, by his, I want to say his mom's agent, you know, his mom's Cameron Manheim.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I've worked with both of them, but I didn't know that they were related.
Yeah.
Well, could have had a career if I would have just made that connection.
But it's also paying attention to what series are coming out and who's in those series and films and all of that and kind of trying it, seeing what actors are gonna hit it the way it's gonna make it special.
My wife's manager told her years ago that the best way to make it as an actor in Hollywood is to have a famous parent. And he was like, that's not gonna happen for you, obviously, but you could work on it happening cool. for your kids. Sure. And now, yeah, that
makes I've cast sense. Many Nepo babies, and sometimes they're awesome, and sometimes it's fine.
Sometimes they're babies.
Yeah. Sometimes they're babies. Yeah.
Jane, did you have something?
So it's kind of like winning the lottery, right? Like somebody does. It happens. It's just the statistics are stacked against you. There are different reasons why actors will accept something. Like I said, on The Ball Method, it was just a USC film. It was just a little film. We got Kiersey Clemons. You know, we got Wally Langham. We got Kyle Secor. And that was because of the material, because it was a real-life story that these actors wanted to tell. They connected to the material. So that's one way that you can attach people if they connect to it.
And it was probably
you just
like,
kind of never know if they are going to connect to it or not.
Was it was probably like a short commitment in LA where they could sleep
days.
In their own bed.
Exactly. It was 4 days. And, you know, we did the best that we could for them money-wise. Obviously not as much as their quotes or whatever, but
you can take out student loans on your short films.
So that's the trick. And they're all SAG, which is nice, right?
Right. And another reason, you know, people do something with on an indie, if you do have the money, you know, if you have financiers that are promising more money, obviously that's a draw. And I was working on an indie recently, and there was one role in particular that they really wanted a big name for. But what they didn't really communicate to me was they could not make the film if they did not have somebody of a certain level.
Their budget
in
was
that
cast
role.
Contingent, that's what they said.
So, you know, and they were shooting for the moon. You know, they wanted Ethan Hawke in it and all that. And I was like, you know, I'm happy to send an offer. I'm happy to call his people. I have never gotten a faster respectfully passing in my entire life.
Good on him.
You're like, hey, this is
obviously another way to get those big attachments is if you do have those personal relationships, if the director or the writer or producer actually personally knows them or has worked with them before. That's a huge help. You know.
So go make friends with famous people.
Yeah.
But like, also like
go to the Chateau Marmont.
Yeah. Any other recommendations of places?
I also
to
have
meet
a friend
people?
Who recently worked on a $300,000 indie, and their mandate was we don't need any stars. We just want to find the right people for the right roles. And it went to South by Southwest, and it was really well.
And the right person was Jenna
Ortega. It was really well received because they told a good story in a good way, and it wasn't about just trying to get a big name actor in the roles.
That's cool. Mary, do you ever cast? You probably usually get projects when they already have.
I was like,
names.
Jennifer Gardner would be perfect for Neutrogena.
Yeah.
No, normally that happens outside of me. That is all business affairs that contacts her reps and does a negotiation and a deal. And there's obviously no like casting for that. So, no, I mean, you know, there's times where it's either up and coming or it's people that have a laundry list of guest stars and things like that. But when it comes to like true celebrities, it's normally just negotiated with business affairs.
Do you guys have a few more minutes to endorse with us?
Yes, please.
Yeah, great.
Sure.
Unpaid endorsements.
I'm laughing because that's what we say on the show, and no one has ever said no.
Yeah, we were looking for something different. You guys just gave the answer you thought we wanted to hear.
I'll kick it off just to set the format. Unpaid endorsements for the uninitiated is essentially just a thing that we like, that we think is cool. And so mine is going to be very middle-aged. I am so excited about a weeding tool that I found on TikTok.
And when you say weeding, you mean like taking weeds out of the ground?
Taking weeds out of the ground.
It was okay, a very not rainy like season. I'm growing nope, your marijuana.
Nope, no,
stuff.
Far less cool than that. I'm talking about in my yard, there are weeds that I want out of the ground.
Okay.
It's called Grandpa's Weeder, and it's a long stick. You stick it down, and you put your foot down, and you pull it just a little bit, and it gets the whole thing up by the root. And I had the best Saturday I've had in recent memory. So if you have weeds that you want out of your yard.
When you all have kids, you'll be like, the best Saturday is when I was weeding, busy weeding in the backyard.
Literally, not I would stick taking it in, care of. I'd pull it out, and then I'd hand it to her, and then she would go put it in the...
Oh, she was involved.
It was so fun.
Oh, cool.
It was the best. So Grandpa's weeder, if you guys need to get weeds out of your yard.
Also, part of the format is I make fun of his endorsements, and then I go and
buy
them.
Yeah, then he endorses a snack.
And then I buy your endorsements, but then you never do anything I endorse.
Oh, I don't like snacks.
Have better things to endorse.
Yeah.
Danielle, what you got?
Well, we usually do all the guests, and then I bring it home with a mediocre endorsement.
Okay.
Do you want some time to get, or when you get something?
Do you want to start with Mary Ruth? Mary Ruth has a good one. She told us it's really good. No pressure.
I was like, I have so many endorsements. I love telling people what to like buy and eat and do.
She has one secret one that she doesn't want everyone to know, but if you're interested in what it is, you can ask her after
the show.
Yeah,
that's right. You can DM me. This is not...
Are you sure you want to say that?
No, you're right.
That is brave.
Okay, this is not a paid endorsement. I am currently very obsessed with Dot's original seasoned pretzels. Not the honey mustard, not the cinnamon sugar, just the original. And then the trick is to also buy a packet of Hidden Valley Ranch. It has to say dips, not the dressing. It has to say dips. And then you get a 16-ounce sour cream, Daisy, mix that shit up, dip the pretzel in it. It's like what dreams are made of.
Wait, yeah. Where do you get this, Dots? It's not.
Dots
doesn't sound
is,
like a Trader Joe's thing.
No, it's not a Trader Joe's, but it is starting to pop up all over the place.
Like
but
Vons,
I know,
Ralph's, Whole Foods?
Like, yeah, like Target will have it. Where did I just see it?
Is it like a premium pretzel or like where is it in the pretzel?
No, it's just like, it's like with all the pretzels, but just to make sure it says original, it's the only one I can endorse.
Detail. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's what dreams are made of. I want to get it right.
Awesome. That's a really good one.
So there is a show streaming on Max. It's called The Dog House UK. Has anybody seen this? Anybody? No? Bueller. It is the cutest dang thing I have ever seen in my entire life. I dare you to watch that show and not melt. So, you know, if I'm ever down, I just pop on an episode of The Dog House UK. It's like a show about rescuing dogs. And it takes place in England, so they all have British accents, and I just love every minute of it.
Scripted or
I
want to
hear a British
show?
Dog.
Yeah, British dog. It's scripted or a reality series?
I mean, I guess it's reality, but...
Sure. A docu-series.
Yeah. So those dogs are cast. Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, endorsing for food, I'm just going to endorse Parmesan cheese. It's just on everything. I personally will put it on a lot of that. Popcorn. I make Italian popcorn that's just olive oil, salt, pepper, and Parmesan cheese. Delightful. TV.
Wait, do you melt it or you just sprinkle like the grated or the
grate
powder?
Grate it right on.
Oh, you actually take a, and there's like a, piece, yeah. a big chunk yeah, yeah, yeah. of
you gotta.
Parmesan.
By the way, never buy already grated Parmesan
Are
cheese.
You serious?
Have to grate it yourself. It's the only way to go.
Yeah, yeah. Cosign.
TV endorsement, I would say. So I'm working on a scripted series right now that's based on the curious case of Natalia Grace. If you haven't seen that Max documentary, highly recommend. It's wild. A scripted TV show that I did not work on Netflix called Boy Swallows Universe. It's based on a book, an Australian author. Fantastic.
Kids show or?
No.
Grown-up show?
Grown-up show. It actually is, the star is a young boy, but it is grown-up subject matter.
And where is that?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, cool.
And then I'm going to endorse, my friend wrote a book. It's called Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. And it's amazing.
Awesome.
Love Great it. Title.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you gave me an invention idea. You know, like salt, how you can buy rock salt and then you have that grinder and then you just have it on your counter for Parmesan cheese, like a little grinder. You're going to tell me this already exists and you have
it. Well, I mean, no, you know, maybe, but also like you go through Parmesan cheese pretty fast, right? The shelf life of like salt is a lot longer, right?
I think Parmesan lasts a while.
Does your Parmesan cheese hang out in your fridge for a while? You got to use it on everything, I'm telling you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, that if it's just like a canister and you're grating it all the time, then it's empty all the quick. It's either moldy or empty all the time with Parmesan cheese is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, you don't have to be in on this patent.
And that's how I lost out on my $1 billion.
I would like an inspiration fee.
Yeah, we'll get you residuals. You pretty much produced this invention, Danielle.
Hey everyone, it's Oren here, interrupting our live show to let you know that at this point in the live show, I made an endorsement that was so controversial, so wild, and so inappropriate. I believe one listener said it's the funniest thing they've ever heard me say, but unfortunately, we were forced to remove it from this episode. So if that is any incentive for you to come to the live show next time so that you don't have to miss out on inappropriate things that I'm saying, please do come. Follow us on Instagram at Just Shoot a Pod, and we'll let you know about the next live show. Unfortunately, you will never know what my unpaid endorsement was, but I can assure you I was not paid for it, and I think it was pretty awesome. Okay, on with the show.
Before we get into the Q&A, can you just tell us real quick? I know, Danielle, you cast so many humongous shows, you just do not like people reaching out to you.
Nobody DM them, please.
But
how can they keep track of all the cool things
you're
doing?
You guys can all DM us, by the way. But how can we keep track of what's going on with you? Can we follow you on Instagram? Do you have a website?
Sure, you could follow me on Instagram. I don't always talk about what I'm working on in the moment.
Okay.
It's usually like an after the fact because it's coming out and I'm allowed to talk about it kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, this is more for like just keeping track of like, oh, this is a cool thing I should be checking out, not like stalking you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not used to being stalked, so it's, we don't get it.
The struggle's real.
The casting director stalking, yeah.
Yeah. I'm on IMDb if you want to like
follow her on IMDb.
Check out my resume. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, great. Jane, what about you?
I am very rarely on Instagram. Like occasionally on Facebook. I know this makes me sound really old, like older than I actually am, but I'm sort of resistant to Instagram culture and needing followers and likes and all of that. I sort of back away from it and go meditate. I'm pretty good about keeping up on my IMDb Pro and making sure that everything that I do is updated on there. So if you really want to check out what I'm working on or what I just worked on,
I mean,
it's
I guess
on there.
If people wanted to hire you, how did they just find you on IMDb Pro and like call you or email you? Is that how it works?
Yeah, my email's on there.
Okay, cool. Mary Ruth, what about you? You got a website?
I got a website. I have two IMDb's, one for my, my brain.
Your maiden name?
Yes, there we go. I have a four-month-old. I get to be forgiven for that. My maiden name and then my married name. And the only credit for the married name is me being on an episode of Vanderpump Rules, which I was and I'm very proud of. But they credited me as Mary Beth, which was just so disrespectful.
And what did you do on Vanderpump?
I was playing me, the casting director, and then Bo Clark was used to be a cast member, and he works in casting, and he was working for me that day, so they shot us at the studio doing our thing.
So
prepping.
Was he So was he working for you because he wanted to get paid that day or because...
Oren, don't ask questions like that. And,
okay, sorry.
No, he was really working for me.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, it is strange how real, like really real it was. I was surprised. Other cast members showed up. None of it was rehearsed. Anyway, that is not really how you find me. I have an Instagram page, Mary Ruth Casting. I have a website. Yeah.
Yeah. I've worked with her. She's highly recommended.
Thank you.
Expensive, but recommended.
Listen, but fast, worth it. Cheap, yeah. And easy. You only get it two ways.
It's not that she's expensive. It's that you're not budgeting properly.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And also, I meant fast, cheap, and good. I said it wrong.
I mean that as a compliment, you know?
No, I know.
Can we get one more big round of applause for our panel? Outgoing credits. Real quick, this episode is edited by Noah Bayshore. It's produced by Tyler Small. And you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And thanks, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.